Well, usually my wife introduces me by telling folks that I'm her fruit that remained. That takes a while for some of you to get a hold of, but and she means remained. The Bible says that if you follow Jesus, he'll make you fishers of men, and she introduced me one time at the Texas Evangelism Conference by saying she fished for me twice. I didn't know how to read 9 years ago, and I met her, and she led me to the Lord Jesus, and I didn't see her again for 4 months. The next time I saw her, I had my beard shaved off, my hair cut. She said it was the first time she'd ever seen me clothed and in my right mind, and she opened the scripture and says, right here it says, if you don't marry the person that led you to Jesus, you'll lose your salvation. Preacher liked that. So some of you singles, you know, get out there, witness. I wish she used to get invited to a lot of singles conference when she shared that, but I'm not a preacher either, folks. I'm not even a high school graduate. I'm a zero with the rim knocked off, and that's nothing. But our testimonies, I know the Lord put us together because of the difference in where we come from. We got into the same junk, the garbage of the world, the drugs and the junk, and we came out the same way, but we come in different. She grew up on a pew. I grew up outside the church completely. I come from a twice broken home. My mother was married and divorced by the time I was 2 years old. My real father, I never knew. I did finally meet my real father for the first time in my life just about a year ago. Something we'd been praying about a long time. I got to finally meet my dad. I was 41 years old. He was 65, first time I ever met him. That was a real deal. But I had a stepfather till I was 13. We didn't get along much. My mother had her second divorce then. She became a single parent. And the best way I know to describe my life at that point is a sign we have in our garage. It says, teenagers, are you tired of being hassled at home or in school? Why not leave home and school today and support yourself while you still know everything? What a great... I should make copies of them to bring and give to parents, you know, so you can nail it on your child's forehead or something. You know, that was me. I mean, I thought I had all the answers. I couldn't even read. I hated school. All I wanted was freedom, and freedom started for me at 13 years of age. My mother took a job at the local post office. She went to work every day at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. When I came home from school, there was nobody there. I could do anything I wanted. The stereo was turned up so loud in our house at 3:15 every day, the windows would just shake. And the kids in the neighborhood came to my house. It was PTA. Party time already, folks. I mean, you know, that's all we cared about. I went to bed at 11:16 every night because it took my mother, 11:15, it took my mother 16 minutes to get home from work. I'd jump in bed 1 minute before she walked to the door. Mom would come open the bedroom door and go, he's a good boy. It was easy to fool Mom. She wanted to trust me. She wanted to believe me. But that trust was quickly abused. I lied. I didn't care about anything but my freedom. And when I was 16, I got my first motorcycle. I even started growing a beard when I was 16 years old. I had 8 hairs on this side. That was the good side, folks. I mean, I thought I was a real impressive fellow. I quit school. I wasn't learning anything anyway. And me and my mother's relationship, I learned how to get my freedom even before 3 o'clock now. All I had to do was yell at my mother or call her an ugly name, tell her I hated her. She would cry and go to her room, and I could do anything I wanted. I began to get more into drugs, more into lies, more into stealing. My mother couldn't control anything I did. I moved in and out of her house hundreds of times over the next few years, and our relationship became more and more belligerent because of me. And when I was 21 years of age, I broke into my mother's house the last time. Really didn't break in because I'd kicked in the back door of my mother's house so many times you could just walk up to it and go, hello, and it would open, you know? I mean, it's him again, you know? I knew me and my buddies could meet there at 3 o'clock and do anything we wanted. It was better than going to the bars because you could do drugs, you could do anything you wanted, and you didn't even have to clean up. What in my house? We just left at 11 o'clock and went to the bars then. But that particular day, I went in, made me a sandwich, turned on a television, called my buddies on the phone, told them to come over for the party, and before my friends got there, I walked into the bathroom. My mother hadn't gone to work. She was on the floor. She was dead. I didn't want to see nothing. I wanted it to go away, and I made it go away. I told people I never knew my mother. Well, if you never knew her, you don't know if she's alive or dead. But that didn't change the truth. I traded an old truck and a motorcycle for a 1952 International school bus, took all the seats out. I lived in that bus for 9 years of my life. Traveled all over this country from place to place. It was easy to find a new town and find the young people. Put big speakers up on top of the bus, turn the music up loud, get out some drugs, and the young people would come and go, "Man, you live in this bus? You can go anywhere you want. You can do anything you want. You're free. My parents make me." But when the party was over, those young people all went home. I never went home. I didn't have a home. And the one thing I was afraid of, folks, even when while the parties was going on, I was impressive. If you don't believe I was impressive, you could have asked me. I'd have told you I was impressive. But when the party was over, there wasn't anybody to impress. It was just loneliness, and I hated it. 10 years ago, on a job site in Houston, Texas, I met Iris's brother, and just 2 weeks before Christmas, 10 years ago, he walked up to me and he said, "Blue, why don't you come home with me for Christmas? You need to meet my family." He said, "But mostly you need to meet my sister. She used to be a liar and a thief, just like you." Impressive invitation, huh, folks? I was excited, overjoyed, thrilled. I was going to punch him in the mouth. The guy just called me a liar and a thief to my face. And the only reason he's got to call me something like that is that I was a liar and a thief, you know? But I mean, Christmas didn't mean trees, lights, and gifts, and it didn't mean Jesus Christ to me. It meant one thing. Everybody went home. I've been at a movie theater 1 year for Christmas with one other person. I've been at the Alamo 1 year on Christmas Day. It's closed, by the way. There's nobody there. I hated Christmas because it meant everybody went home. I've been at malls at Christmas time, and I can remember the anger of seeing a mother and her child shopping or a whole family together, and I just wanted to hurt that dad so those kids would know what loneliness was, or hurt one of those kids so those parents would know what loneliness was. I hated it. I was angry, I was bitter, and I was alone. And I went home with Ernest, not because I liked him and not because I wanted to meet his sister, who used to be a liar and a thief. I just didn't want to be alone. He called Iris. She was living in Georgia, working with the Home Mission Board, and told her she had brought home a gay activist leader from New York City the Christmas before. She had brought home a convicted murderer from Louisiana for Thanksgiving. So her brother called her and said, "Sister, don't bring home any weirdos with you this year for Christmas. I already got us one." Said, "This boy lives in a school bus with two big German Shepherd dogs, and it's hard to tell who's the hairiest, him or the dogs. He's got a filthy mouth, and he can't even read, so don't buy him any books. We don't want to embarrass him, but I'm bringing him home to meet you. He's a liar and a thief, just like you used to be." And I went home with Ernest. I met Iris for the first time. I wasn't that impressed. I hadn't met a lot of girls that I was eyeball to eyeball with to begin with. And matter of fact, she used to be a half inch taller than me. Old arthritis has ate an inch and a half off this girl in the last 5 years. But when I met her, they even gave me a little gift from under the tree. I didn't expect that. I unwrapped that package, and inside was the Bible on cassette tapes and a cassette player to go with it. Can you imagine my thrill? I wasn't going to play that. I was going to teach her a lesson, and I thought I could embarrass her by sharing her past with her. And I tried to share her past that her brother had already told me she'd been in prison, she'd been a heroin addict. I tried to share those things with her. I thought she'd cry and run to her room the same way my mother did when I was a boy. But when I shared her past with her, she said, "That's true. I'm going to a church this Sunday. Why don't you come with me?" And I'm like, what went wrong there? But I was like, I got her now. I'll go. I loved sharing because I lived in a bus back then. I had two pairs of blue jeans, dirty and dirtier. I put on dirtier for church. I put on my favorite flannel shirt. Had a big hole in it right here. I figured I might as well wear something holy. Them people think they are. I didn't care about church. I wanted to go. I didn't think she'd really take me. I figured she'd come see what I looked like, and she wouldn't take me anywhere. She came, picked me up. I got in her car. She didn't even say nothing about the way I was dressed. I usually wore my hair in a ponytail, but I pulled the rubber band out and let that hair just kind of hang down everywhere. It was past my belt. My beard was about to here. I never cut it or trimmed it because it stuck out different lengths. Everybody said, "Man, you're tough." I loved it when people said, I loved being able to park my motorcycle in a grocery store parking lot, and I had them shepherds rode with me everywhere I went. I'd get off and go, "Stay." I'd go into the produce department, and everybody in the produce department left. I'm impressive, folks. I was a very impressive man. If you don't believe me, you could have just walked up and asked me. I was very impressive, but my lifestyle made me lonelier and lonelier. And I went to that church with her just to watch those people get on her. I knew when they saw me, they'd tell her, "Never bring nobody like him there. And we walked in a building, and it was just about this same size. We walked in the back doors together, and I heard just what I knew I would hear. About 50 people kind of, and they all looked right straight ahead, and this woman, about 90, bent fingers, silver white hair, stepped right out in front of me, put those little bent fingers out, and shook my hand, and she smiled at me and said, "We're excited to see you today." And I thought, what's wrong with her? Doesn't she know I could throw her across this room? I'm bad. She's just standing there grinning. And I want to tell you, I sat in that church and heard Iris share her testimony. And I tell you what, it blows my mind to this day, because I tell you what, people, I really believe the only reason she's still sharing her testimony is because she really loves you people and she doesn't even know you. She didn't have to come here today and tell you she's a tramp or a prostitute or been in prison. She doesn't have to tell anybody. And she doesn't tell you to see what she was. She tells you this, that you will understand she grew up where you are and didn't know the King. Even spent time in a prison cell where they celebrated every religion starting on Saturday night going all the way through Sunday. Had tables set up in the prison. But do you think that a lot of those people there knew Jesus or Muhammad or whoever it was they chose to worship? Well, see, I didn't know anything about church. And that day when a preacher said, "If you don't want to go to hell," well, I didn't volunteer, folks. I didn't want to go. I said everything the preacher said I should do. I confessed Jesus is Lord. I confessed I was a sinner. But I left that building, went back to my bus, back to my drugs, back to my life. I was in control. And it wasn't until 4 months later on a long-distance phone call with Iris. We'd shared a lot of different things together, but she used a marriage ceremony. She asked me to imagine I was getting married. Standing in a church at an altar, and a preacher would say, "Blue, do you take this girl for your wife?" And I was on a long-distance phone call listening, and she said, "Pretend you've met the perfect woman. She's everything you've ever wanted in a girl, and she's agreed to marry you. You're nervous, but you're standing there at this altar, and the preacher says, 'Do you take this woman?' And you'd say, 'I do.' Then the preacher would turn to her and say, 'You take old Blue here?' And she'd smile in her beautiful white dress, her hair perfectly fixed, and say, 'I do. But I got this boyfriend, Tom. I'm going to marry Blue, but every Friday night I still have to go out with Tom. I'll wait till Blue goes to sleep so he doesn't miss me. Then Tom will come over, pick me up, take me home. I'm going to sleep at Tom's house every Friday night because I've been dating Tom for years. Of course, I'll be Blue's wife.' I listened to that over the phone, and I cussed. I told her, 'You can tell that woman to stay with Tom. I'm not marrying some girl that's going to sleep with somebody else.' And she said, 'You wouldn't accept her commitment?' I said, 'That ain't a commitment, lady. That's garbage.' And she said, 'What do you think God's going to do with your commitment?' I didn't have one, folks. I had garbage. I started crying. I said, 'Hey, lady, I don't even know how to pray. I've never read the Bible. I've only been in church once in my life. And I don't know nothing about God. All I know about is me.' And I said, 'Lady, for 33 years, I've been living for myself. I haven't cared about other people. I've only cared about me. And I don't know if I care about other people now, but if God's real, I want to do whatever he wants me to do because I want to be a Christian. And I don't know how to tell you what happened, folks, but Jesus Christ entered my life at that moment, and he revealed to me a simple truth. It wasn't no sign, it wasn't no lights, but it was this. It's easy to lie to people. I fooled my mother easily. I fooled my friends, and I fooled myself most of all. But nobody, not a single person here or anywhere out there, has ever fooled God. Jesus Christ knows every one of you better than you know yourself, the scripture says. And Jesus Christ said to Dwayne Blue, 'I know you're guilty of your mother's death. You didn't put the pills in her mouth, but you were the cause. I know you're a liar. I know you're a bully. I know you're a thief. And I love you, Dwayne Blue. I died for you, Dwayne Blue.' Well, I don't know you people, but he does. And he said your name, and he died for you. I know they got a hymn of invitation picked out. I'm not a preacher. I'm not going to really extend an invitation. But we were in a church one time, and we shared our testimonies, and a 70-year-old woman stood up at just at this time in the service when it was over, and she was a member of that church, and she said, 'Please, I need to say something.' Sure. She stood there and she said, 'Everybody in this room knows me. I've been a member of this church over 50 years. She said, I've been in love with Jesus Christ for over 50 years and I read my Bible every day. She said, but today I realized something. That if I met a man 50 years ago and I moved into a house with him and made house payments, raised children and bought a car together, that wouldn't make us married. Only if we committed our lives to one another would we be married. She said, I've been in love with God and with Jesus Christ all my life, but I've never committed my life to him. And she said, I'm coming today to do that. And a 70-year-old woman extended a better invitation than I've ever heard given. Because it doesn't matter who you are today. The Bible is clear. All have sinned. It doesn't say some have done bad things. That's what I thought. We're born separated from God. And until you come and make his commitment, you're lost. So your need today, if it's Jesus, the only thing stopping you is you. They're going to start playing that hymn of invitation. Your pastor will be standing here. I'll be there. My wife will be here. If you need Jesus Christ, all you got to do is step out of that pew, come take him by the hand and say, I need to commit my life to God today. This morning we shared kind of how we came to the Lord, and tonight we're kind of sharing like the rest of the story, you know, what happened when we first became Christians. And really I was thinking about it. I said, it gives us an opportunity for you to know us better because the real surgery is going to start tomorrow. I mean, really, you know, I'm not a preacher. Iris is, you know, there's nothing knowledgeable about us. God's just taken us from a peculiar place, and he's brought us into his kingdom, and he's allowed us to rub shoulders with people, folks, that would blow your mind. We've been, we really have been around the world. I don't understand it. Brother Manly Beasley was a great man of God, and he was almost like our daddy. You know, we spent every Christmas with him, every 4th of July, and he made you trust God for stuff. You know, and I mean, he puts you in a position. There's no way out. You got to trust God for something or fall right down, you know. But if you fell down, he'd come over there and stand by you and pray and point you in another direction, and it was always Jesus. And when I first came to know the Lord, I couldn't read. I didn't know nothing about church. I lived in a school bus. I had a beard down to here. I had hair down there. I drove a 3-wheel motorcycle every place I went. When I used to go, before I was a Christian, I'd go to work. I worked in the construction industry. Now, you people know what a jack-of-all-trades is, don't you? Well, I was never a jack-of-all. I was like about a 3-of-all-trades. I never knew enough to be a jack. I was way down there. But I have had about every kind of job you can imagine. I've done a little bit of everything. Mostly, I was in framing. I had nail guns, air compressors, but I had a hydraulic paint rig. I'd done plumbing. I'd done a little bit of everything. And I worked in the construction industry. When I used to go to work, sometimes I even lived on a construction site in my bus. I had guys pay me extra money to live there in my bus and not let anybody steal anything off the job site. Nobody ever stole anything off a job site that I lived on, except me. You know, it was easy to tell the boss, well, you know, I went for dinner at 6:30 last night, and that's when that truckload of plywood came up missing, and I sold it. You know, I didn't care about them guys. I didn't care about nothing but myself. When I didn't live on a job site, I'd get out of my bus wherever I was parked, and I'd go load up, and them two dogs would jump up on the back seats, and I'd cruise across town in the morning, people pointing at me everywhere I went. And when I got off work, I was in the bars every night, and I'd pull into a bar parking lot and go, stay. I never took my key out of my motorcycle. I didn't have a big problem with people fooling around with it in the parking lot. There's two big German shepherds sitting on top of it, you know, in every place I was. People didn't even park near it, you know. And when I became a Christian, folks, I didn't have to bow my head and go, can I just get drunk on Friday nights? I mean, I knew that was stupid. I needed to be in a local church. The only Christian I really knew was Iris. She left the country 4 days after I prayed that prayer. And it wasn't even Sunday. I hadn't even one Sunday come yet. And she had shared with me that I needed to make a public profession of faith. And she told me why. And when she told me why, I got really excited. I couldn't believe that when I publicly professed Jesus, he would profess me to his Father in heaven. Man, I wanted that. And I went to a local church the first time in my life on a Thursday. Now, if you came down here on Thursday, folks, there ain't a lot happening here. But you know why I came on Thursday? Because I didn't want to see all you people. See, there's two kinds of loneliness in the world. You can be alone in the 1952 International School bus with a couple of dogs, or you can be alone in a bar full of people, or a church full of people. And the bus was bad, but it wasn't as bad as the church full of people or the bar full of people. And I didn't want to be around all them people. I knew they wouldn't like me. So I came on a Thursday. I knocked on the pastor's door. He opened the door. His eyes kind of... And I said, sir, I don't know nothing about preachers. I always figured you were the laziest men on earth. You only work one day a week. And since you're not doing nothing today, wherever you go, I'm going. And his eyes got a little bit bigger.
And you should have seen him explaining me at the hospital that morning when he made about three different visits to people. And you should have seen him at lunchtime when he met three other pastors explaining the big, ugly, hairy guy with him. And you should have seen him about 4:30 that afternoon when we got back to the church and he said he was going home. I said, what time do you get here in the morning? Because I was there waiting on him, folks. I'd already quit my job. I couldn't work with them guys anymore because I'd hit my thumb just 2 days after I was saved and I said an ugly word and one of the guys I worked with went, I knew it. You're not a Christian. And I started crying and I said, buddy, I said, I'm through working with you guys. I said, you've got to know my life's different because if you'd have pointed and yelled at me 3 days ago, I'd have punched you in the mouth. And I said, I'm leaving here today and I'm just going to the church. And I went to the church. And I came to my first Sunday morning service to make my public profession of faith. And I came about 30 minutes before church started. Because, you know, the only place I'd ever been in my whole life with a lot of people was like a rock concert. And if you want to get a good front row center seat at a rock concert, you better show up early to that thing. I mean, in California, I camped outside of an auditorium all night with sleeping bags. Me and a bunch of my buddies, we had booze and everything, you know, drugs and everything. We waited all night to try and get front row center seats. So I came about 30 minutes early to church. Parked my motorcycle out in the parking lot, went to stay. Came inside, got me a front row center seat, and that really wouldn't have been a problem here, would it? Wasn't a problem there either, folks. Good Baptist folks come about 10 minutes early so they can get a back row. They don't want to get too close. They might have to hear something, you know. Back there is safe. And I came, sat on the front row, and I couldn't believe what happened because that preacher got up, and he said things like, for God so loved the world. He gave his only son that whosoever believe in him could have everlasting life. And I started crying. Big, ugly, tough man on the front row is crying, but you know, the front row is a pretty good place to be when you're crying because everybody's behind you except the choir. They're the only ones that could see me kind of. And when church was over, I almost tackled that man when he said, does anybody need to make a play? He was backing up as I was coming, you know. And I got baptized that night. And I wanted everybody to know, man, that I was a Christian. And my life was different. And I came Sunday morning, Sunday night. They told me something they had at that church on Tuesday night called visitation. There was about the same amount of people, same size church as this one right here, folks. About 200 people on Sunday morning, maybe 250. And on Tuesday night, they had this thing called visitation. 5 people came to it. I didn't know what it was, but I came because I just wanted to get involved in everything. These people met in the hallway, prayed, and left real fast. And I was standing there going... And the preacher had to explain the big, ugly, hairy guy on Tuesday nights, too, when he made visits, you know. I came on Wednesday night. I came back the following Sunday morning, Sunday night, Tuesday, Wednesday. I came 4 weeks in a row to everything that church had. And I sat in the front row alone, and I didn't know nobody. They didn't talk to me hardly at all. I didn't know what to do. And I wanted to get involved. And I didn't know how to get involved. Couldn't read yet. I didn't know nothing about Jesus. Didn't know nothing about church. But I knew something I'd learned in just 4 weeks of coming to that church, that preacher, almost every single time he got up here, he'd ask for volunteers. Every time. It seemed like he'd ask for them 5, 6 times sometimes. You need 3 men to stay after and move pews, or 5 men to help set up tables, or 3 ladies to cook. They're always asking for volunteers for something. So me and the Lord made a little deal. The 5th Sunday I was going to church on a Saturday night sitting in my school bus, I made a deal with the Lord. I said, God, I'm going to volunteer for something tomorrow. Maybe that guy right there is going to volunteer. Maybe that guy right over there. Them 2 dudes will be stuck working with me, man. You got the plan? I'm going to church tomorrow. I'm going to volunteer for something. I'm going to know somebody down at that church if it kills them. I don't care what it takes. I'm knowing somebody tomorrow. And I went to church 30 minutes early, got my parking place, stay. Nobody ever even parked on that side of the building, folks. But I came in, got my front row seat, sat down. People came in and sat as far back as they could. You know, nobody ever sat by me. I thought it was because... they didn't like the big, ugly, hairy guy. I didn't know it was against the rules. You ought to put a rule up there. Don't sit in the front of the church. Now, how's people supposed to know you're not supposed to sit down front? But I sat in there, and preacher came in before the service even started, and he said, we need 2 volunteers. And boy, I got excited, folks. I was ready. I was going. I started looking around the church. Who's it going to be? Who's it going to be? And before anybody even volunteered or anything, he said, there are so many children this morning already, before church has even started, in a nursery, that we're needing 2 more workers. And I'm like, no way. And I looked around the room and everybody was looking at their hymnals or the bulletins and there wasn't a single volunteer. And the preacher said again, please, we need 2 volunteers. There's an awful lot of kids already and there'll be more coming. And nobody raised their hand. And I ain't kidding you, folks. It was like I heard God yell and say, boy, did you say you'd get involved here or not? So I put my hand up. 50 women immediately raised their hand. Two women got up, ran right out the side door. They didn't even raise their hand. They was gone, man. And I was just sitting right there on the front row, and I almost started crying. I said, God, if you'll give me another chance to volunteer for anything, I don't care. If he says he's asking for volunteers again today, I ain't even going to raise my hand, God. I'm going to stand up right here. He ain't going to miss me. And I waited, and the whole service went by, and he never said it. But at the close of that service, just before he had the closing prayer, he said, oh, and by the way, we're having vacation Bible school, and we need 20 volunteers. And I stood up right there, and he looked over here. And, you know, Mrs. whatever, and he said, 8, 9, and 10, 11, and blue, that's 12. Any other volunteers? Not another hand went up in the place, folks. They stopped right then. And I didn't know what it was or nothing, and when service was after the prayer, I went over to the preacher, and I said two things to him. I said, I need to tell you two things. First of all, I said, I don't know what's wrong with these people here. Are they just stupid? Or they just don't want to learn nothing? I said, you've given them a chance to go on a free vacation at a Bible school, and they didn't even want to volunteer for that. And he laughed a little, and I said, you know, I live in a bus, and I don't even own a suitcase. What do you think I should pack to go on the vacation at the Bible school? And he said, Blue, this ain't a vacation. And you ain't going to a Bible school. He said, we're going to have about 200 kids down here next week and teach them about Jesus. I said, forget it, buddy. I ain't coming to that. I don't know nothing about Jesus. I can't even read. And I don't know nothing about no little bitty kids. I've never had no use for them. You can't steal nothing from them. You can't sell them any drugs. They ain't got nothing. You know, I said, I don't like kids. And he said, listen, Blue, you're going to be a gopher. I said, what? He said, you're going to go for cookies. You're going to go for chairs. You're going to go for lemonade. You're going to go for pianos. You're going to go for whatever's needed. You be here Monday morning, 9 o'clock. You're going to work in vacation Bible school as a gopher. And I came Monday morning, 9 o'clock. I went to the preacher. I said, what do you want me to do? He said, there's three women in that little house next to the church. You go over there and you do whatever they tell you to do. And I went over to them three women. I said, the preacher told me to come over here. What do you want me to do? And they gave me this great big Tupperware bowl full of all these broken up crayons and told me to walk among these children because I was in a room with 27 four-year-old children. And I walked around the room and all the kids grabbed a handful or two of crayons out of that bowl and they peel the paper off them before they eat them. They will not eat the paper part. Apparently that's a parental job of you to teach them that paper's bad for them and only eat the crayon center. And what they didn't eat, they began to throw on the floor at each other or at me. And I'm like, you know, this is really looking thrilling now. And I went back up, gave the lady the empty bowl. She gave me a big stack of paper and said, give them a piece of paper. And I wanted to say, why, lady? They've either eaten or thrown away the crayons. They don't want no paper. But she was in charge, so I walked around and gave every kid a piece of paper. And they just wadded it up and gave it back to me at a high rate of speed. And I'm like, dodging paper wads. And I just went over and stood in the corner of this building, and I'm watching them. I mean, 27 four-year-olds, folks, could be hired out to destroy anything on the planet's surface. I'm talking demolition. One little boy's taking off all his clothing but his underwear, and he's walking around in his underwear, and I mean, ain't nobody even noticed, you know? And if them ladies don't know that boy's about naked, I ain't gonna tell them, you know? I figure, I'm just standing in the corner going, wow, 9:05 already. And I just said, God, I want to be part of this church, but I don't want to be part of this vacation thing. I'm getting out of here somehow, God. And I said, I just had an idea. I'm going to go tell them two ladies over there that I'm sick and my son. I said, I'm going back to the bus. I'll come to church, God, but I ain't staying here at this vacation for nothing. And I walked over to them two ladies and I said, excuse me. They said, just a minute. We're going over to the church to get a few more cups and a couple gallons of lemonade. We'll be back in 10 minutes. You stay here with her and the children. Excuse me. And they left. And I walked right over to that other woman and I said, excuse me, ma'am. And she said, just a minute, I need to go and see the preacher and I'll be back here in about 10 minutes. You stay with the children. I just walked back over and stood in the corner, you know, just watching them. And I really started thinking, what if they attack me as a group? I'm bigger than they are, but I'm outnumbered here. And then I started really seriously thinking, look at them, pull each other's hair, they're flipping over tables and chairs and throwing things at each other. What if somebody really gets hurt? What's going to happen at noon when parents come down here to get their kids and they find out their four-year-old got hurt in the room with the big, ugly, hairy guy? What are you going to tell him? Oh, your four-year-old fought a good fight, but he died in vacation Bible school? And I really started getting scared, thought, if I don't do something here quick, there's going to be a big problem and everybody's going to hate me. And I came out of the corner, walked right into the center of that room with all them children yelling, screaming, pulling each other's hair, kicking, pulling over furniture, everything else. And this is what I said to him. I said,
"Hello there, Earth children. I am a robot. Please sit down."
27 mouths fell open, 27 hineys hit the carpet, folks. I mean, there was no noise, no movement, just 27 pairs of eyes bugged out looking at me. So I said,
"Please pick up the crayons and put them in the bowl."
Well, they went to picking up crayons, folks. A few minutes went by, these three ladies came back in. I had 27 four-year-olds seated in rows. And they called me Brother Blue. They were climbing all over me. One little boy came up and grabbed a handful of beard and just pulled my face down and said, "Brother Blue, my shoes are untied." So I tied his shoe, you know. And my head goes like this. This little girl's got my ponytail back here just pulling on it, you know. And I said, "Yeah." She said, "I got to go potty." They mean now, too. They don't care whose picture or name is on the door. You're supposed to know that. And I'm like, "No." Another little boy got me by the sleeve, and he said, "Brother Blue, please come to my house for dinner tonight. My mama ain't never seen a robot, and I want to show her you." And they climbed all over. They wanted to know if they could sit on the motorcycle. They wanted to know if they could touch the dogs. They wanted to know if that hair was real. They wanted to know if they could pull my beard. They wanted to know. And you know what else they said? They said what I needed to hear more than anything else in the world. 27 four-year-olds said, "Brother Blue, I love you." And next Sunday morning, folks, front row wasn't empty no more, because I'd finally found some of the godliest people down at the church. There were four. And they said, "Brother Blue, I love you." And I did get invited into a home that week for dinner. A member of that church, a woman cried at her dinner table. She had a 4 and a 5-year-old in vacation Bible school, and they wanted their mama to meet the robot. And I got to eat dinner in their home that week, and that woman started crying at the dinner table and said, "Please, forgive me. I didn't want you in my home tonight for supper, and I didn't want you anywhere near my children. And I'm asking you to forgive me. And if there's anything I could do to help you." And I was trying to go through a course called EE, Evangelism Explosion. I couldn't read with a lot of scripture you're supposed to memorize. And that woman helped me by reading those verses to me so I could memorize them, so I could go out on Tuesday nights and share my faith with other people. And I want to tell you, I didn't want to be in their home either, folks. Her husband was a Houston police officer. I'd met some of them before, but I never had dinner with one before. But I want to tell you, the big, ugly, hairy guy, about 4 months later, shaved his face, cut his hair. Didn't know my hair would begin to commit mass suicide at that point, or I would have saved that thing and started gluing it on now, you know. But I want to tell you, folks, Jesus Christ came to this earth, was born, lived a sinless life for 33 years, and died in my place. I came to earth, was born, and died for 33 years to be born again and live for Jesus Christ. I'm not educated, I'm changed. I don't know where you people are at. I don't know whether you'd accept some big ugly biker in the parking lot or not. But I know this. Two final things I want to share with you. My mother took her life on a linoleum floor. And she was within 2 miles of 8 different churches, and I never remember one of those churches coming to our door and saying, "Shirley Blue, we have the answer to your life just down the road inside our building." I don't ever remember one coming. And I know that when my mother died, she was lost. There wasn't one evidence in her life that she ever knew Jesus Christ. I've even got her Bible. I've been given her Bible since then. It has her signature inside and not another mark in it anywhere. It's never even been opened. There wasn't any evidence of Jesus Christ in her life. And I wonder if Jesus Christ became illegal and you were arrested tomorrow for being a Christian, would there be enough evidence in your life to convict you of the crime? Or would you be able to be released under your own reconnaissance because you don't look much like a Christian or act much like a Christian? When I came to know the Lord, I didn't have to bow my head and go, "God, can I just do some garbage? Can I just get drunk one night a week?" I knew that was stupid. But this church and all churches are full of people that still dabble in garbage and think it's okay. And the greatest need in this church is for your personal holiness. Greatest need in my family is my personal holiness. I can't give that woman or my little boy nothing unless I have a great relationship with my God. Then I got something to offer, folks. When I came to know the Lord, I was in bars every night of the week, same bar. And there was a woman in that bar that I knew very well. I claimed her as one of my very best friends, and I don't even know her last name. We just called her Miss Alice. Miss Alice was in her 60s, a nice woman. Never got drunk, just had four or five beers every night after work, while some of us guys got plastered there every night. But Miss Alice, we loved her because every Friday night, Miss Alice brought a big old five-gallon pot of soup or a five-gallon bucket of chili or spaghetti or something out of that little bar where all us guys hung out, and we ate home cooking every Friday. We knew Friday night was coming. We was eating Miss Alice's food. And on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Miss Alice never paid for a beer. We all lined up to pay for them because we loved her and we knew she was going to feed us on Friday. And I didn't see Miss Alice after I became a Christian for 2 weeks. And 2 weeks after I became a Christian, Miss Alice came over to that old bus I lived in. She knocked on the outside or parked her car right there. And I came and grabbed that handle and swung those two metal doors open. And Miss Alice stood there with a pot of soup in her hand and a bottle of liquor. And she said, "Blue, I heard you lost your job. I brought you some food. And I brought you some booze. And we hadn't seen you down the bar in a couple of weeks. And even if you don't have any money, we want you to come down to the bar tonight. We'll even pay for your drinks. We just want to know what happened to you." I told her. I said, "Miss Alice, the man you come to visit, he don't live here anymore. He died, Miss Alice." I said, "Miss Alice, I live here now with his motorcycle, his dogs. But I live here with Jesus. And I ain't coming back down to that bar." And you know, just a few short weeks later, one Saturday, it rained hard, and that old three-wheel Volkswagen engine wouldn't start Sunday morning. And I didn't make it to Sunday school or Sunday morning worship or Sunday evening worship. And not a single person from that church came by that bus all week. And I don't know you people yet, and I don't want to alienate you on the first day. I don't want to upset you. But I know what's out there. The world out there, they'll come after your kids. But the church, we sit and hold the greatest gift ever given, Jesus Christ. And a bunch of you in here have received that gift, and a bunch of you think you've received it, and a bunch of you know you ain't anywhere near it. But the greatest gift, we just hold it. And if you've here tonight and you've received that gift, God didn't give it to you to just unwrap and put on your mantle. He gave it to you to give away. And I wouldn't be here tonight if some family hadn't loved Jesus enough to look past the beard and the filthy mouth and the anger and the bitterness of my life and see a boy in need of Jesus Christ. The reason I'm here. And I was sitting there thinking, you know, the very first message God ever gave me when I started getting into his word was, and I'll mess this up about the name, but there was a boy sitting in a third story window in an all night meeting. And he finally fell asleep and fell out of that window onto the street below and died. And I just called him Bill because I could never say his name the way it was in the Bible. I just said, "Bill, fell out of the window." And Paul ran down and threw himself on that boy. And that boy came back to life. And the Bible says he went home with his family. And they rejoiced greatly. The first time I heard that on cassette tapes, I said, "God, I know what you've called me to do now. You've called me to run through the church and kick them right in the rear end and tell them, 'Get up. You're dead. Do something for Jesus.'" And I read it again and realized that when Paul threw himself on that boy in the street, he was willing to lay down his life for that boy. But that boy became of value to him and worth, and he was willing not to kick him, but to love him. And that's what I want to do, folks. I want to fall in love with Jesus in a way that I can love you. In a way that I can love the world out there. In a way that people can see Jesus Christ in my life. Because nothing else is going to matter. So wherever you're at tonight, surgery starts tomorrow, folks. I'm excited about the opportunity to be able to share with you more than just this. Because many times we go in a church and we only have a Sunday morning and a Sunday night. And we don't get to share more of the riches of what Jesus Christ is doing. And I'm excited to be here for a few days. And be with family, because family is very important to me. I never had any until I became part of the family of God. And if you're here tonight and you know him, I'm your brother. You don't have to like me, but you've got to love me. And I'm asking you to pray for me and Iris. I'm asking you to not just be the normal Sunday morning. And I'm excited to see as many. I didn't think there'd be this many here. Usually the crowd's real thin on Sunday night. And the real cream of the crops will be here tomorrow. Don't miss. Nothing we're going to do is going to change anything. But I believe God's going to do some surgery here, folks. And I want to be part of it because I need the operation. And if you need the operation and you want to see what he can do in your life, go home today expecting and come back tomorrow and Tuesday and Wednesday, and we'll see Jesus do great things. But tonight, there's going to be a hymn of invitation. And there's people sitting here right now that know but don't know. My preacher calls that a 10-inch conversion. You need to take what you know and let it become who you know and who you live for. Meeting Jesus Christ is like a marriage ceremony, and nobody here would accept somebody else in marriage who was going to give them only part. Oh yeah, I'll be your husband, but we would never accept that. We would never accept less than everything, and we expect the Holy God to do that. We expect him to come to us. We expect to be able to come to him and say, oh, I don't want to go to hell. I want to go to heaven, but God's met many people here at the altar, and they've had their but in the way. The only thing you need to move tonight is your legs out into the aisle and come down here, take your pastor by the hand, myself, my wife, and say, I want to be a Christian, no buts. I want to give my life to Jesus Christ and receive from him that gift that you spoke of. It is a gift, folks. You can't do nothing to earn it. Jesus gave it to me, and I deserved it the least of all. But I love him and I praise him tonight. And if you want to meet him and know him, you come as they play this hymn of invitation and give your life to him.